Are you ready? Quick review. We did last time the world clock dream. Big idea there was just two dimensions. The timeless and the time intersecting. We did the Wallenstein dream, which was about a guy who refused the call of fate, even though fate would not allow it. And that was very apt for Pali. Then the dream of cathedrals that should be built for isomorphy meaning basically repetition of form. So that meant that what Pali was to do was to create in the outer world what was existing in the inner world. And that basically applied to his creativity so that the inner forms would become positive in seeing their reflection in the outer world, where they'd become negative because they created that Pali effect, creating a negative synchronicity. Then there was the dream of Bohr saying that the transition from V to W was important. Then that there was a party at Bohr's Institute. The V, I basically went with Jung's interpretation, had to do with the natural man, and the W with a doubling of that, meaning that you have to look at life in stereo. The way Jung put it was that both the external sensory aspect of life and also its hidden depth of meaning have to be seen. You're always looking at the events of life and then the images and the unconscious that appear underneath them. Then there was what I thought was a very ominous dream of the experiments with reflections showing up, and the dark woman says these are just mirror images. And I talked about the problem of the just, that these things are always two things at the same time. And in my mind, that showed that the anima was turning against him and really leading him astray because she'd sort of gotten sick of him, which is always the danger in this work. Where we left off was the two essays that Pali wrote. I don't know if I brought this along last time or not, but they're published in here. One is called Science and Western Thought. It was a lecture given in Mainz, and then it was actually Jung's 80th birthday. There was a magazine in Zurich that published a what they call Festschrift, a writing festival, in one of its editions, and Pali contributed the essay something, the Ideas of the Unconscious. Ideas of the Unconscious from the Standpoint of Natural Science and Epistemology. Both of these essays were problematic. I mention it and also because we'll be looking at the dreams that follow his writing, the dream that follows his writing it. Science and Western Thought looks like it's dealing with the issue because it talks about there being two valid ways of knowing, the scientific and the symbolic, the scientific and the mystical, the scientific and the religious, that there were two sources of knowledge. So I think Pali would say, well, look, I'm taking a stand and throwing my weight behind the validity of religious knowledge. But the problem is that we've seen all along in his dreams that the dreams say they're not two separate things. So he's dividing up the world into two, when we'll see, for example, today, we'll get to it. The dreams show that the laboratory is the church, and the church is the laboratory. And we'll show that the stranger is giving a sermon on formulas in the church. So that's the first thing he does, is kind of flee from that issue. And the other thing he does is not really deal with the fact that this imaginative world speaks through matter. And it's speaking to him about a certain relationship, and he prefers not to deal with it. So he never gets into the real meat of what this means for us or for him. The other essay he wrote, which I said is just downright insulting to Jung, has the following ending. Again, it looks like it's complementary to Jung, because throughout he looks at how Jung's idea of the archetype and the unconscious has had precedent throughout history, that Jung is articulating something that has a tradition behind it. But then he ends with the sentence, this way of looking at things leads me to expect that the further development of the ideas of the unconscious will not take place within the narrow framework of the therapeutic applications, but will be determined by their assimilation to the mainstream of natural science as applied to vital phenomena. So basically saying that psychology is going to be usurped by physics. And that, again, was such a contradiction not only to his dreams, but to some of the things he has said already, and we'll say again. For example, I dug back 192. Remember what he said there? The synthesis of the two letters is not yet achieved, since the fairy dues have not yet been paid. Such a synthesis has to go back as far as the emotional source of the natural sciences. See, that's what he did not deal with in his essay, that emotional source of the natural sciences, which also means going back to the archetypes on which they are based and their dynamic force. Then the synthesis will no longer be a science but religion. So there he says just the opposite that he says in the essay. So he'd say it privately, you see, but he wouldn't say it publicly. I think still today in most...
I mean, they were required to be kind of like religious figures, right?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. In a way, it's become our religion.
But it kind of, everything got separated later.
Yeah. Okay, that takes us to 223. What is written there on 223, I've just explained. It's just, the author just quoted some of Pali's essays. But for our purposes, I think what's so important is the dream at the very bottom. The Chinese woman has given birth to a child that the people do not want to recognize. I agree with what he says. The child can certainly, over in 224, the child can certainly be understood as the lecture. And his own conventional resistances don't accept what he just said. No. No. I don't think in the mainstream. I think you can see offshoots of the scientific tradition that, you know, Fritjof Capra and these books that are coming out on Tao of physics and so on. But yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's one reason why we're meeting here and not a university. I told you what that chairman of the psych department said to one of the professors at Butler. Don't teach Jung. Straight out, don't teach Jung, because it's not scientific.
A psych professor said that?
The chair of the psych department said that. I forget her name, she left. Griffith? What's her name?
Oh, yeah, Nan Liu or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
How could she say that? I thought she...
No, she was told that.
Oh, okay.
No, I got water in my head.
Oh, no. Now you don't have that thing.
No, that's what the thing was.
That was there from last week, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, it was dry in there, so I didn't see the reason for it.
I bet I found out because I thought I was spewing water out of my ear. I can just move back.
Well, you know, last week we were here for 2 hours and never looked up, never wondered why that was there. Now I see.
I'm sorry. I was just
Gideon and
I found out where the water got on my head.
He thought he was being baptized.
You're being baptized into Jungian psychology. I think that's the main point. 224 just refers to that other essay. You can kind of see a little bit of Yafe's response. Well, I'm not so crazy about her. She just ate it up because she gushes over him. Today I read your essay, Omar Zeck, I read it twice, and with great pleasure and profit. It is really fantastic how you can summarize such a wide span of cultural and historical development in so few pages, and at the same time give the pertinent details concerning the decisive parts.
Yeah.
I think she's a suck-up. That's what I think she is.
Well, she probably knows that Jung wants to keep that relationship because she's been what she's been.
Don't make excuses.
Probably never
did. Oh, he did her dirty at the end. And in a way, you can see how she set herself up for it. She, that's the way these people work. They get you to idealize them, and then they stab you in the back, which is exactly what he did. And she fell for it. It's easy to fall for, but. 225, I think more of the same. He's just going over what I went over. Something that's just worth, you know, I don't have an answer to this, but it's certainly something I have puzzled on, and I can only throw it out as a question. What Jung then responded to Pally's essay, and with not great pleasure, and basically said, what you've done, Pally, is you've ignored the synthesis of psychology and physics. Jung felt that the synthesis of psychology and physics would lie in the area of number. I'll read you what he says. My feeling is that the common ground shared by physics and psychology does not lie in the parallelism of the formation of concepts, but rather in that ancient spiritual dynamics of numbers that you point out. The archetypal numinosity of number expresses itself on the one hand in Pythagorean, Gnostic, and Kabbalistic, should be geomatria, not geomateria. Geomatria is Hebrew number symbolism. In Kabbalistic speculation, that, in other words, the letters of the alphabet have certain numerical values, and the words would hold secret meaning, therefore. And on the other hand, in the arithmetic method of the mantic procedures to the I Ching in geomancy and horoscopy. Accordingly, there is sufficient justification for bestowing on the number the characteristic of an archetype. Consequently, number also acquires the autonomy of the archetype, dynamics of number. For the mathematician, this feature of number is rather unwelcome and virtually unknown, since he uses it simply as a means to an end for counting and measuring, defining it as 1 plus 1 plus 1, etc. Now that's why, those of you who did Number and Time, that's why von Franz wrote Number and Time as a response to that kind of paragraph. I for some reason resist that. I did through the whole Number and Time. I might be wrong. But what has struck me is that the real future lies in the in just what he says it doesn't, in the parallelism of the formation of concepts. How do physical concepts how do images in physics and images in the dreams overlap?
Now, what are you saying you're fighting against?
Well, I don't know if it's number that unites, going to unite the two. I think it's going to be images.
I'll go with you. I'm an image person.
it's not images.
But images, images can be numbers.
Well, and that images are processes, and processes are defined 1, 2, 3. So, but I just never was convinced by number and time, and I don't think she was either. But this is all, who knows? I mean, how would we ever know? I just throw it out there.
How can
you
see
one? Well, if it is, then we'd have to find a way to understand it. I don't understand it. What really grabs me is those dreams of scientists where, like in Pally's dreams, where the scientific concepts show up in the dream as a metaphor for personal psychology. Remember the splitting the ground state and the egg going into the square, e to the minus ix, remember all that kind of stuff, the four circles. That to me is where there's work to be done. I just don't see where do you go from here with numbers. But I don't, you know, I'm not trying to say we have to decide anything. I'm just throwing out. That's the issue. Where is future research going to go? Okay, that's pretty much the essays. Page 225 at the bottom, we got another dream. I am on a journey. An image appears on which a deviation around an obstacle is represented. and that's the one picture I did not include by mistake in the diagrams. Can I draw it back there, maybe? Do we have any paper left, or is that shot?
Then you use the best.
But it might help you. This is the diagram. So something is going along, hits a block, and then goes around.
So the journey is the arrow, right?
The journey is the arrow. Then there appears a timetable for a very fast train, which is due to depart at 5 p.m. from a place not specified and does not stop very often. Along comes my wife and a Swiss friend, not a physicist. Let's call him X. My wife says that we should go and listen to the sermon of a very famous preacher. X immediately complains that it would surely be very boring. We all three go into the church where some strangers are waiting. At the front there is a blackboard, and on it I write lengthy formulas. Some of them deal with the theory of the magnetic field and have a lot of plus and minus signs. Now comes the major unknown figure, the famous preacher we have been waiting for, the master. Remember, the master is another form of the stranger. So the stranger is preaching in the church. That's, again, what I was saying earlier, that his unconscious shows these things as a unity. And he's talking about his formulas in the church. Again, not separating science and religion, but putting them together. He does not look at the people, goes to the blackboard, glances at the formulas, is very satisfied with them, and starts speaking in French. Le sujet de mon sermon, it should be Sarah, S-E-R-A. Sarah, c'est formulé de Monsieur le Professeur Pauli. Il y a ici une expression de quatre quantités. So that's pretty easy to translate. The subject of my sermon is these formulas by Professor Pauli. Here we have an expression of the four quantities. After 3 years, you'd think I could do a sentence. Sometimes you'd be wrong.
You could be put in the same position after 4 years.
Yeah, I know, probably after 20 years. Como? Then he pauses. The voices of the strangers can be heard shouting louder and louder. Parle, 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 when you speak, speak, speak. At this point, my heart starts beating so fast that I wake up. Now, I checked the original text of this dream, and the text in Adamant Archetype goes into a little more details and actually gives the formulas, which I don't think we need to know. But sure enough, what one of the factors in one of the formulas is the sign for the magnetic field. So it has something to do with the magnetic field, these formulas. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about physics to, and I don't think it's important that we really figure out what those formulas are about. Again, I mentioned this particularly in light of what he wrote in that essay. Mr. X represents my own, see where I am, conventional resistances to something that does not exist, since it is neither science nor religion in the conventional sense of the terms. What all this is about is the problem raised in Dream 28, August 1954, of getting right to the source of getting right to the archetypal source of natural sciences, and thus to a new form of religion. Do I say that? Suddenly he forgets about that when it's in public. French, as the language of the country of feeling, corresponds to the eating of the two red cherries in the earlier dream. Well, remember those two red cherries in the earlier dream, I think there were more than two, but whatever they were, Jung said is about your physical desire for von Franz. It was not some intellectual feeling. I mean, it is feeling, but it's feeling in the body together. So again, he separates things that are joined. To overcome his resistances, Pauli has to take a journey which will bring him by an obstruction. The goal of the journey is, in fact, portrayed in the second part of the dream as Mr. X personifying Pauli's resistances. The goal of the journey is, in fact, portrayed in the second part of the dream as Mr. X personifying Pauli's resistances, anticipates that the sermon of the unknown preacher will be boring. Then it turns out that Pauli's own formulas are the contents of the sermon, and that the master is the preacher and begins addressing the strangers. The master here personifies Pauli's new professorship. Thus, at the end of the dream, Pauli has a heavy heart, has heavy heart palpitations, because this scene portrays Pauli's own error. He certainly knows that he can only reach the healing wholeness when he overcomes the obstacle and commits himself to the master. We know we've seen this before, but it's just another version. And what I think is so interesting, how, from the dream standpoint, there's no difference and there's no incongruity between the formulas and the church. And, you know, one sees that more and more, that the church is not, I mean, in dreams, that the church is not a separate building, that people will go into Kroger's and it's a church. Or they'll go into the gas station, it's the church. That the unconscious seems to be wanting to make what we consider secular, sacred. Or how do we take our ordinary life and make it sacred? We've talked about that. And in this line, along this line, I just was digging around in the exchange of letters last night and came across this quote where Pauli says, not in reference to this dream, but in general, my dream actually makes no distinction between laboratory and church. So, you know, the way I understand that is that if, you know, if a scientist or if somebody like Pally could honestly wrestle with the unconscious, they would find that their research comes out of their dreams, that the dreams are giving them, they think they're just pursuing a realm of research, but in fact, that's, if it's genuine, it's being based on dreams in the unconscious. They're just not aware of it. So if they could do that work and realize at the same time that work is based on an unconscious imagistic process, which at the same time has a personal meaning for them, then the split between science and psychology breaks down, that their creative work in science is the way they get to know who they are. And that makes life sacred. And that's the solution to the problem. But who knows? That's my two cents. He says more stuff there, but it's nonsense. 227. Remember, he got a new house from the three popes earlier. So he's referring to that. And apparently he had yet another dream shortly after, about 6 months after the previous one, in which a house is officially placed at the disposal of him and his wife. Now here's something to ponder on. It's more curiosity than anything, because I think at this point it doesn't really matter, but it's, if you want to just chew over it, it's kind of fun, maybe. A new house is officially placed at his disposal, at the disposal of him and his wife. So that's progress, because remember in the earlier dream his wife wasn't there. The new house is in Enstorf or Lenstorf, and it undoubtedly has to do with the physics in Hamburg. As in Hamburg, Pauli was assistant to the physicist William Lenz. And Charles Enz received his doctorate under Pauli and then became his last assistant. And he's also the guy who's become the biographer of Pauli. There's a biography out now in German of Pauli. The message of the dream is therefore not an unqualified favorable one. With an officially known house in an area that has no clear relationship to death psychology. In the dream, Pauli and his wife accept the call to the new house, and significantly, Pauli's colleague Reis Jost joins them. Jost was another one of Pauli's assistants. Now, this is the interesting detail. As I say, it's more of a puzzle than anything. But Jost is, however, someone who took a stand against the thoughts that Pauli expressed in the Mainz lecture. In a letter to Marcus Fieritz, Pauli says that Jost thinks that I have only made a lazy compromise between the two elements of the pairs of opposites, that to him my entire attitude tastes strongly of a doctrine of salvation.
What does he mean by that?
Well, that's a good question. That's my question. I think Pauli and Jost had a huge blow-up, and Pauli just, I think, literally screamed him out of his office, and they parted their relationship. And it's been cited as one of those examples of Pauli's instability. He apparently idolized Jost, and Jost, I think I got this from David. I don't know if it's in print or not, but you know, in German, it's not so much now, but it was then, this business between the formal and the formal mode of speech, du and sie, French vous and tu. But Pauli and Jost spoke du to each other, which is really odd for a student and a teacher. There was a unreal level of intimacy between them. I don't mean sex or anything, but just a closeness which is unnatural, And then on the other hand, it ended in a huge fight where they were, the relationship was severed. So to me, that really in a funny way adds some positive value to Yost here, that it's a point of view in contradiction to Pali. It's somebody with whom he had a fight. Which was never healed. Split that was never healed. And, you know, what I don't understand is Yost criticizing Pali because he's even dabbling in the connection between physics and psychology. I think that's what he's doing. He's that he would be a hard-nosed rationalist. And that you know, Pali, why don't you get over this religious stuff? Doctrine of salvation. I think that might be what he's saying literally. But if we take it as a metaphor, I think he's right. It is a lazy compromise. That's what I've been saying. And but I don't know about the doctrine of salvation. I don't see what's wrong with having a doctrine of salvation. That's what we're all about in Jungian psychology. Not salvation in the metaphysical sense, but in finding healing. So, whatever it is, I'm thinking that the presence of Yost in the dream doesn't makes the dream more positive than our author alludes to. That what it shows is Pali taking up a house in which there's a critic. But Pali needs a critic. Again, it's a detail, because it's not going to make any difference. But what I have tried to suggest to you is, even though this stuff gets tedious and boring and repetitive, that we can see how the unconscious keeps coming back again and again and again and again and again and again to bring him back to the truth. And I think this is not as negative as the dreamer, as the author suggests.
In other words, doctrine though, I think, puts a whole different slant on it, because the doctrine means a single way that's going to look the same for everybody.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, that word, it's just rife with dogmatic thinking.
Yeah.
And we certainly, Jungian psychology is about wholeness, but everybody's path is its own unique relationship to the unconscious. There's nothing that final about it. So, to me, that, to say that,
yeah,
right back into old thinking.
Right.
Well, I think the whole sentence is pejorative. I mean, he's just seeing how he can most get him.
Yeah, what I think he's saying, Pali, you've gone too far in this stuff. And I think you can read it as saying, Pali, you haven't gone far enough. That's all. So it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. If it's what Nancy says, then which is what the author is claiming, then it is a bad sign that he's settling down with his resistance. Or, if you take it the other way, that he's settling down with his critic.
When was there a fight, before or after this?
I don't know.
Because it sounds to me like something a very angry person would say.
I'll see if I can find that out. I think I've got that in the biography somewhere. I am guessing... See, when is this? 1955. I'm guessing it was before. Hmm. But I'm not sure. Because Entz would have been, the last assistant.
This will say a lot about the way Pauli describes to other people what he would be thinking about, too, that if he comes across in a way that doesn't allow for any play in the conversation, meaning any kind of an exchange, then
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't listen. I can just, the sense that you have of him being speaking with an assuredness that would completely turn people off. You know, he's either got to be right when he speaks. He doesn't allow for any, I don't know, I'm speaking in circles, but I'm just thinking about his, the way he delivers
yeah.
things in conversation would probably be very off-putting. And if he could have softened his even to himself,
yeah.
I think he could have allowed for more play.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something to play with. Who knows? He's dying anyway, so what's the matter? Really, that's the way you feel with these guys after all. You know, so many times that the dreams tries to help him, and you say, well, let me help you die. You know, you seem so hell-bent on dying. That's the dark side. Something or other. By this time he's in despair. I cannot find anything, I mean an activity, which permits me to continue. Where leads the road? Well, damn it, you've only had about 20 dreams telling you. So at this point, you see, you just start checking out. And then, this is such a slip that it's scary. He's talking about now that he has to go down again. So I'm going in that last quoted paragraph, about two-thirds of the way down. When one descends sufficiently deep into the netherworld, that to the stream of life itself the pair of opposites must fade. As the author points out, the river Styx is a stream of death. So there I think you can see. He's starting to check out. Apparently in 1955 he had a romantic tryst in Hamburg. So the unfaithfulness is back. Dream 43. There is an official announcement about a king, about the visit of a king. He actually appears and talks to me with great authority, saying, Professor Pauly, you have an apparatus that enables you to see both Danish and English. And that Danish and English would be a reference, remember, to the earlier dream of the singular letter versus the double letter. And what I like so much about the author here is he gets it. He says, that's wonderful, but he doesn't use it. And, you know, I think we have seen that in the dreams and in his private correspondence, he has it. But in his public lecture, he doesn't put it forward. And that's exactly what the dream is showing. He doesn't use it. Another sad note, as von Franz's birthday comes, she gets not a note from him. On June 29, the relationship to the feminine has been broken, and thus the king in Pauly's dream can no longer renew himself. People who did not want to accept the child of the Chinese woman have prevailed. Questions, thoughts, feelings?
Sad.
It's sad. Mm-hmm. It is sad.
I have something to add. When
yeah.
we get to the idea of parody, I just have some new
Shoot.
Scientific.
Shoot.
Well, he couldn't imagine that parody was possible.
Possible or was it? It was broken.
It could be violated.
Yeah. What is parody? Do you understand?
Not well enough to explain it very well. Let's see what my paper says about parody.
I was going
to
skip over
it's,
that.
It's a mirroring where there are some things I don't really understand about it, but it's a symmetry.
Yeah.
Of particles.
Right. If you're interested, although it's, I got frustrated and gave up. There's a course at the Indianapolis Library on string theory, which is from the teaching company. And they talk about it. And honestly, it's so complicated, I couldn't understand it. I gave up. But basically, you can't just say, oh, it's this or this. It's, I believe, if I got this right, that they look at particles and associated particles. Now, how they define how one particle is associated to another is a whole comp. You have to understand so much to get each link. And the basic idea is made up of about 10 links. But basically, if you can just take this roughly, there are sets of particles, and then there are parallel sets of particles. Don't ask me how they figure that out. And I think all of this has to do with there being a balance, that for every type of this particle, there's this particle. Every type of this particle, there's this particle. And that their behaviors are analogous or in reverse.
Right, and some particles have this symmetrical partner and some don't.
And some don't.
And so recently, with that idea, they've been using that idea that some particles don't have a parity partner to explain the fact that there's more matter than antimatter in the universe. They can't understand why that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why aren't things balanced? So they're using this idea that parity can be violated to explain that. And what that made me think about was in Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, Jung is thinking about the universe and about the balance of good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using that as a metaphor for the particles in parity. And he's saying, Jung is saying that his hope is that there is a favorable, the universe favors the positive, because that is how things grow.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels that, well, perhaps there is some balance that is towards the, we can call it good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
The meaning, I think he says, that meaning may prevail.
Yeah, meaning may prevail, exactly. And I think symbolically you could look at the idea of parity that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he couldn't accept the violation of parity would comment on his attitude towards meaning through the transcendent.
That he somehow thinks meaning won't prevail.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to add that.
He didn't embark on this avid research to make use of that.
But he can't fulfill it.
Yeah, right? But nobody else has. It's a tough problem. It's the unified field, it's unification that stays there. That's like,
yeah, what happened?
I was going to say that one of the reasons I keep promoting that Letterman's book, but he has a simple way of just intuitively letting you know what that difference, that breakdown of parity means. That if you look at yourself in the mirror and you raise your left hand, the figure coming out of the mirror is actually raising the right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that in nature, and the laws that you see around, that deal with the stuff around us, you know, everyday stuff. You cannot tell the difference between the mirror image and the real person. And the laws are said to apply to both equally, and you can't tell the difference. But inside the particles, that doesn't hold, and it's possible that when you raise your left hand, the particle, the thing in the mirror would actually raise the left hand also.
Mm.
And that would break down. And that's a simple intuition of seeing, showing how that works. But it's kind of, I went to the mirror, you see it on paper, but it's kind of fascinating to actually see, when you raise your left hand, the object out of the mirror is actually raising the right hand.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's what we intuitively see around us, and that the laws show that those are equally valid, and that Letterman makes the point that in all this complicated mathematics and so forth that develops, that comes out easy because of that you cannot tell the difference between the mirror image and the real thing. They are equally valid, but that breakdown in parity.
And that's parity, when you can't tell the difference, is
right?
That right?
Breakdown in parity says that that image in the mirror may not exist, and you only have the one. That's what you're saying. You don't have both. You just have one.
It's going over my head.
I mean, that's just intuitive, yeah, without getting into the big time mathematics. That
right.
You can actually have the situation where you don't have the mirror image, you just have the one,
mm-hmm,
the one, the real image.
And that goes to what Carol was saying, there's more matter than antimatter, right?
Is that yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. Let me just throw it out. You know, at Pauli's point, what they knew about was the electrons and then the nucleus made up, this is like high school chemistry, made up of protons and neutrons. But since then, and just beginning at this time, they have broken down those protons and neutrons into a gazillion other little pieces. And the same with the electron. Within the electron, there are, I don't know how many, but a lot of other little pieces. So what they're talking about now is how these teensy little pieces behave with respect to each other. And what Pauli's so interested in here, I don't know where he stands in the history of all this, but he was one of the ones to predict from mathematics that there were these smaller particles. And one of them was named the neutrino. I think he talks about that in here. But the neutrino is one of, I don't know what, hundreds, or maybe 100 other particles.
One of the things I was thinking about kind of relates back to how trying to grapple with unconscious and how the unconscious mirrors the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of say that we got to be careful that what is in the unconscious, thinking of the inside the nucleus,
mm-hmm,
another world, may not have a simple correlation that it could be complex.
Yeah, that's true.
Couldn't it be the opposite? Couldn't it be more in the unconscious than there is in the outer? Or did you, is that what you were saying? Maybe I misunderstood.
Oh, yeah, I didn't thought about that, but that's what it's...
I'm thinking it's more in the unconscious, uh-huh, than in the...
Well, that relates, I really was stuck first by the Jung's archetypes of the unconscious, where really the first book I read of materially by him was that the unconscious is like the sea and the conscious is like the river.
Mm-hmm.
I always remember that.
Yeah. Is there any more you wanted to say?
No, oh. I just wanted to make that.
Yeah,
symbolic.
I have tried. I would like to understand this stuff someday. I feel I have to if I'm going to go any further. But
you have the Lederman book.
No, I think I do.
Lederman actually got his Nobel Prize as a follow-up experimentation, doing that in simple terms to prove that there was this Chinese. It's mentioned here, the Chinese lady.
Yeah.
Did experimentation Wu, but that was very complicated, very experiment. He actually was doing accelerator. Experiment, and he was able to get the muon to decay to get and essentially the same kind of process that she did, but he was able to do it in a very straightforward way, doing the accelerator with the accelerator, and that was the basis of his Nobel Prize.
What's his book?
The Godfather.
Godfather.
Yeah.
You have
it. Yeah, I brought it back to
you
today.
Oh, okay.
It was driving me crazy.
But he was a part of that, and he described, he actually described the theoretician who predicted that and gave guidance to the experimentalist who was at Columbus with him, and they went to lunch every Friday. Dr. Lee, who was head of the luncheon crew, and he described how that all happened one day when that law was broken down.
So the big deal was parity was proven not to exist under some circumstances. Is that right?
Dealing with the weak forces within the nucleus.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I see.
The weak forces cause that radioactivity, the decay.
Right.
And
is the weak force what holds the neutron
right,
together?
Right.
And what's the strong force?
I don't remember.
Oh.
But I looked at that recently. It is the weak forces. So apparently, in this world dealing with the weak forces, parity
has
broken down.
I've tried. I'll go back to it. I thought this teaching company course would be good on string theory, but it's the guy's got his head up.
If you try to connect that between consciousness and unconsciousness, if you think about putting it all in time, adding the factor of time, that only a certain amount is visible out of this enormous amount that's in the unconscious at any one time. So what you're really describing is the evolution of consciousness, just as you're describing the evolution of matter and what we can see in matter. And so we end up in these periods where when the shift is occurring, it falls on parity.
I don't understand parity, so I'll say you're right. Speaking of time, it's time for a break. Yeah.